you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers, by writers who hate writing, but now are required not to write. So that works out perfectly for us.
It does, doesn't it?
I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but I'm hearing rumblings. I'm thinking this strike might be close to over.
What?
And I'll tell you why. The news is, it's all over the place. I just this morning walked past my local bakery. There was a big sign in the window that said apple crumbles.
Oh, God.
First joke of the day. First joke of the day.
Oh, no, it isn't. That's not true.
Oh, and we're off.
I hated everything about that. I hated the false setup that you would have news about it, of all people. No, you wouldn't. The optimism that's the direct... The direct opposite of everything I'm witnessing in line. The false hopes of, like, the premise. You did such a bad job selling it.
Did I tell you it was awful?
It was terrible.
It was wonderful. We need another take.
We need a million takes of that, and we may need to recast.
It's so funny. I predicted this would make you upset. Boy, was I wrong.
Well, it worked.
That's your big opening salvo.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I got a Danny Smith sign off. All right, but we are now in week two of the writer's strike, and we have given you David Goodman, negotiating board member. Last week we had Justin Halpern on the WGA board, and this week we are excited to talk to our old friend. He's been here before. He's been through several strikes. We'll talk to him about that. Mr. Mike Scully is here with us today. We are incredibly excited to talk to him, but he has to wait. We're looking at his face right now, and he's about to talk.
I said, let's get Mike Scully to talk about...
Oh, I wanted to talk about this with him.
Okay.
Because this was very offensive to me. So yes, I know what you're going to say.
I love this.
But let's wait till he's on here so he can defend... He will have to defend himself. And we'll get him on here to defend himself. And you'll hear about what in a minute. But Goldie, I wanted to talk for a minute up top. There was something you did a few months ago on the podcast that was incredibly funny and very fun. And so I came up with a variation of your bit here today. So I want to try something.
Sure.
You may remember a few months ago, you quizzed me and JC about, is this a YouTube star or did I make this name up?
Right.
Yeah. A real celebrity.
Is this real or not?
Right. I don't know anybody anymore.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
So in the same world of not knowing anyone, my daughter, Levy, is very into country music. It's very popular now, like here in Massachusetts, which it never was when we were growing up. It's like, she knows everything about Stagecoach and just, she loves it. So I've kind of been dragged into, because anytime we drive anywhere together, she's like, you know, put on the Sirius XM country station, and so we're listening to this, this, and this. And I noticed while looking at their names on there, something peculiar. So we're going to play a little game right now called Country Singer or Someone I Went to High School With.
I love it.
So let's start that right now. And just to give you a little tip off, I'm going to read all of the names with a little country twang so they don't sound any different. Okay, here we go.
John Viner.
Well, you know that one. Yeah, no, and I will say up top, I wanted two names that would have worked very well in here, but I can't include because you met them, are Tom Hudner and Timmy Harmon.
So,
those aren't in here, but here we go. Country singer or someone I went to high school with. Wells Blanchard.
Oh.
That's someone you went to high school
with. High school. Very WASPy name.
That's correct. Yeah, that's JC, you nailed it. That's not like Luke Bryan.
All right. But it's pretty close. All right, here we go next. Braxton Jones.
Oh, Braxton sounds very country. I say country singer.
That's Braxton true. I'm gonna go with JC because I don't think you'd do two high school people in a row. Now this
psychology.
Is like my downfall as a student is I analyze
the order,
the teacher thing, and not the actual topic at hand.
Okay, that is someone I went to high school
oh
with.
Oh my Fuck. God,
Braxton Jones.
Of course it is. Of course you'd start with two, and maybe you even do three to just totally throw me off.
This
the
is
trail.
Hilarious.
All right, well, you'll have to try it out with the next name, which is Parker McCollum.
Oh.
Parker McCollum.
That's someone you went to high school with.
Country singer.
Country singer. Oh, Goldie's all out of sorts. Here we go with some more.
The notion that I'm failing at anything is so enraging right now, even though the stakes are nothing.
There are no stakes.
I love it.
All right, here we go. Colin Studs.
That's
Colin.
A country singer.
High school.
That's a country singer.
High school.
That is high school.
Oh, my God. God damn it.
All right, here we go. A few more. Madeline Edwards.
Oh.
That's someone you went to high school with.
That's a country singer.
Oh, shit.
Fucking shit.
You didn't even give me a
sorry,
chance.
Sorry, JC. That's I didn't okay. want you. I just wanted to get
yes.
Goldie so
no,
fast.
No, you're
I
right. It would probably be
myself.
More enraging
okay, here
if
we go.
I got it right.
Will Willis.
Will Willis?
Will Willis.
Country singer.
Yeah, that's got to be a country singer. Oh.
High school.
Oh, you
no,
fucker.
That's such a stupid name. No one would have that name and go to private school. Will Willis? That's a
sorry,
fucking,
Will.
That's, I'm sorry.
You can curse on here.
What's your middle name? William Willis?
It's
Will.
Bill.
Will.
Wonus. Wonus.
Will Wonus.
I really apologize.
Second joke of the day.
What a horrible thing I just said.
No, he doesn't listen.
Okay,
he doesn't listen.
I'm unraveling. That's why.
All right, here we go.
It has nothing to do with you, William Williams.
Here we go. Bailey Zimmerman.
Oh,
okay, you went to high school with that person.
Country singer? Oh.
Country singer.
Oh, shit.
I love it.
I'm now Roman Roy in that Succession episode where any decision I make is going to be the wrong one.
Yes.
It's a Schrodinger's cat where I'm wrong all the time.
No, you're going to get back on track. You're
like what? They aren't a country singer or a high school student until I say the wrong answer.
right. Until you open the box.
Yes.
And they're definitely dead. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Next. Sean Whalen.
Okay, high school.
I was saying
yes.
Okay. Yeah, Goldie.
Yes.
You get
You're back. Andy's back. Okay, here we go. A few more. Steph Southard.
Oh, Steph?
Steph Southard.
That's a high school student.
Country singer.
High school student. Yeah. And Goldie's back on the board. Climbing his way back in. All right, here we go. A couple more. Carrie Bragdon.
Bragdon.
I mean, that's a country singer.
I say country singer too.
High school.
You fucker.
All right, just two more.
Bragdon.
Ross Hill.
High school.
Country singer.
Hill. What's that, JC?
Country singer.
High school.
High school.
Yeah. Why am I rooting for Goldie to be right?
That's a Massachusetts, that's just your average kid.
Oh, okay.
Last one. Sam Byard. Sam
I'm gonna
Byard.
Say
it's tough because you think they would make them change the name because it's confusing to be a country singer.
Sam
but,
Byard.
But maybe country singers pridefully don't change their name.
Like Zimmerman?
They wear that stupid hat too. I'm going to say that's a country singer.
So do I.
High school.
You fuck.
Oh, this was so fun. That was so fun. Goldie, thank you for thinking of that bit.
Totally unraveled.
Oh, cool.
Fit perfectly into that. All right.
I'm having a bad day. It's like 8:46 a.m.
Let's change that. Let's bring out our guest and change that.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Soft intro here. You've heard him before on this podcast if you're a fan. We've both worked with him. He's one of our heroes, our mentors, one of the best comedy writers ever to do it. Mr. Mike Scully is here, and he has the courage to join us for a little segment we call Johnny Jokes.
Whoa, from Hollywood, and these were all written a few weeks ago here. Johnny! Hey,
yeah,
doesn't matter when we wrote these. It's just
Evergreen.
Making money for Amazon. We can do that, right? All right, Mike, would you like to lead us off, or where would you like to go in this batting order?
I will go first. And speaking of jokes written a few weeks ago.
Here we go.
This joke I actually wrote 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago to this day. My cat woke me up at 4 a.m. because she decided she needed an earlier breakfast. And the story was breaking. And I wrote this joke and I sent it to somebody who's on tour and they've used it. But it's the definition of a topical joke. It literally had like a 24-hour shelf life.
I can't wait to hear it.
So I'm asking the audience to go back in their mind 2 weeks ago.
Oh, what right? a time it was.
So if you were watching Johnny 2 weeks ago, you might have heard this joke. Okay, big announcement today. Despite concerns about his advanced age and habit of saying crazy things in public, the New York Jets have acquired Aaron Rodgers.
Did he send that joke to Will Willis?
That, of course, was the day of the Biden announcement. Yeah.
Yes. It was just one of those things. They both happened the same morning.
Yeah. So
you don't get those two. All right.
That's good.
Back to real stuff. Okay. Story from the world of science.
Ooh,
science.
Love that. Whole world.
Scientists have discovered a link between oral sex and throat cancer. In other news, the LA coroner has changed Nancy Reagan's cause of death.
Oh, my God.
I love that. Get her.
Determined to destroy her legacy.
Yeah, she could not just say no to oral sex.
Oh, my God.
Aretha Franklin's childhood home is back on the market after a deal to buy the house fell through. Yeah, the seller withdrew his offer after he wasn't allowed to inspect just a little bit.
Just a little
little bit?
Inspect just a little bit.
INSPECT.
I'm just glad you didn't make some joke about Aretha and falling through.
That's where I thought it was going. A less skilled writer.
Yeah, you did way better than that.
Story from Texas. Texas politician Brian Slayton was forced to resign from office after he got a 19-year-old member of his staff drunk and had sex with her. You know, if he didn't want to get in trouble, he should have just shot her.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh, love it.
All right. And this last one, I want to attempt a norm.
Yes.
I love it. Do it.
So, I'm clearing my throat like I have a Norm impression.
Right.
Maybe I'll spin around in the chair first and just go something like this. Yeah, it seems that crazy Writers Guild strike out in L.A. has turned into an unlikely dating scene among striking writers. Yeah, because the best way to start a relationship? Unemployed and angry.
Perfect. Excellent.
Great job.
Great job.
That's right.
Okay.
That's it.
Here comes Johnny Two. All right. Well, the votes are in for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the inductees this year include Kate Bush and George Michael. It's perhaps for the best that Michael has passed away, as he famously hated Bush.
Oh.
Famously hated Bush. Here's a big story from this weekend. King Charles had his coronation ceremony last weekend, with many Brits predicting a long reign. Meteorologists mostly, but still. All right, a little softy. Jury selection has begun in the Smartmatic voting machine lawsuit against Fox News. The plaintiffs say they are looking for unbiased jurors. The defense says they are looking for your uncle on Facebook. Uncle on Facebook. Keyword for racism. All right. And thankfully, finally, former Happy Days and Charles in Charge star Scott Baio said he will be leaving California due to the homeless crisis. The former actor says he now plans to be homeless somewhere else. Hallelujah. Johnny Three, take us away.
Okay. Well, across the pond, Prince Charles was coronated this week. As the crown was placed on his head, more than 2,000 people shouted, "God save the king." And more than 20,000 shouted, "And kill his brother Andrew." Prince Harry was relegated to the middle of the crowd, and his wife Meghan Markle was back in Santa Barbara. She didn't skip the ceremony, that's just how far away her seat was.
I like that one.
Meanwhile, down in Brazil, Mark Zuckerberg, Meta Facebook chief Mark Zuckerberg, won gold in a jiu-jitsu tournament.
Oh.
Yeah. And asked his key to victory, Zuckerberg explained he spent hundreds of hours in a gym bribing referees. Okay. Well, this is an interesting story. A man staying in a hotel smelled something odd and then looked and found it was a dead body under his bed. And he did the only thing he could do. He put it on the room service cart and pushed it into the hall.
I like that one. That was a great one.
Actually looking at that Zuckerberg one last night, and I kept trying to think of something. All I knew is it had to end with, "In his gi."
That's so Carson. I know. Well, anytime jiu-jitsu is brought up, it's instantly Jewish jitsu. So, there's something that, I was looking at that one too.
There's no way he's good at jiu-jitsu. It's like when people would say, "Obama's actually pretty good at basketball." It's like everyone is just making him feel that way, I'm sure.
I know. Yeah. Obama's jumper was weird. Just a weird look.
Terrible form.
Yeah.
Another great shot, Chief.
I know. It was like he got no elevation, but his back legs kicked up insanely high.
And his arms like, also, it was a push. Like they didn't arc up and in. Yes. It was like just a push.
Yeah. It was like a zero elevation Toyota commercial. Oh, what a feeling. What a feeling we have here today, because as you heard from his great Johnny Jokes, and I again applaud your courage in coming on to do that. Not many guests do. So that's a real writer right there. All the other ones, fake writers. Mike Scully is here talking to us today, although that was not a given last week when I texted Mike Scully and asked him to come on the show. It was a pretty clear no. There was just, you know, but not really a real excuse given, but it was definitely a no. And then the next thing I know, Goldie's texting JC and I practically with like the picture of Rudy being carried off the field in Notre Dame.
I didn't like, get that sense,
guys, but... I got Mike Scully. He's coming on. So I want to know what happened.
What happened?
So can I go first, Mike, or do you want to go?
Sure. No, go ahead.
So when I had the idea to bring Mike on, I said to you, Alec, so Mike has now experienced three writer's strikes, and so I thought he would have a very good historical perspective of the issues behind them and how he's been at different places in his career in each one, how he handled psychologically getting through it, sort of tactics he's seen used in the past to undermine writers, and what we maybe should look out for, what we are going to experience in this strike based on past strikes, how the issues have changed, etc. So I said it's not really about the issues in this strike per se, because we've covered that with David Goodman, Justin Halpern. It's more about Mike's personal experience and the wisdom he can bring to this. And I said, so we should have him on. You agreed. And then you said, I'll text him and ask. And I knew when you said I'll text him, you would fuck up explaining the reasons for him to come on.
I wouldn't think I would have to explain that. I would
give
just,
it any
I just
nuance.
Thought he
you
would...
just go, hey, can you come on and talk about the strike? which we people do.
I picture Mike, it's like Christmas morning getting a text from me. Picture him getting so excited and me saying, do you want to come on the podcast? And him being, sure. And then I didn't know that I thought we would talk about those things you talked about when he was here. I didn't
people
know that I needed
wanna
to
know
explain them.
You're thinking about them. And
yes,
their
that's,
circumstances,
that's
not
what
just
the
your
text
needs.
Is for.
Your need. I need guest. Must ask guest. No. What is in it for guest? What is opportunity for guest?
Oh,
what
God.
Is
how will guest feel? How make guest feel good?
Will Willis.
won't us.
Anyway, I'll let Mike explain Willis. For himself why it's
yeah,
better
Mike,
to be asked
tell,
by
tell
me than,
how this
than
went
by
down.
You to do a podcast.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
Well, I do have the text exchange right
oh,
here.
Oh, that's what you were
yeah,
up
please,
to.
Feel free. Feel free. I'm an open book. As long as you're a male
an
guest,
open
I'm
book.
An open book.
Yeah. All right. So would you be interested in coming on the podcast this Tuesday morning to talk about the strike?
Unbelievable.
And I replied, sorry, I'll be working.
which is funny. Very funny. I ha-ha'd that.
Okay.
Right. And a couple jokes were exchanged. So I said, well, there might be someone from the committee that can speak to the specific issues or experience them, gave some names. And one of them you just had on yesterday, which was Justin. And then Alex said, look, you weren't my first choice.
That's how you handle rejection.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he said he understood that I was respectfully passing.
Yes.
Okay.
And that,
yes.
That was kind of the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I heard from Goldie, I think it was like the next night, like Sunday night or something.
I let it breathe a little bit.
let me cloak myself in that failure.
I said, you can't ask right away because the stink is still on the initial request. But
there was stink.
Maybe the windows have been open, a match has been lit. and the air is clear for a further
That's
explanation.
Funny.
No, but and I'm flattered to be asked, Alec, and you know, I want you know, to keep that Mulaney surge going for you guys.
Yes, thank you.
You will.
Oh, no, you're getting the Scully plunge now.
No, not at all.
By the way, I just want to say Mulaney was a great guest, incredibly gracious to do the show, and also yesterday. I was out on the picket line, and he was there.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Wow.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Nice.
So he's you know,
he's one of you.
He's got boots on the ground too. He's doing his part. Someone as successful as him is out there and, you know, giving up his work, which means more than me giving up my work.
Right.
Yeah.
That is.
He might not be on a show though.
Yeah. Where were you picketing?
I was at Warner Brothers, which I don't have a personal beef with Warner Brothers. I've never worked there, really.
Okay.
I mean, Zaslav, that guy is the worst of them.
It seems like it.
He comes from this reality world, which I don't know. Have you ever been on the Discovery app?
No.
Yes.
No.
So I went on it because they had a documentary about Jared the Subway guy, which I had to watch.
Oh.
So I took my free trial week. The documentary was bad, as you would imagine.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it didn't get into the fascinating part of the story, which to me is like,
why are the sandwiches wet?
That. And that people were like, you know, we couldn't do anything about it. He was too powerful. And it's like, he's just a guy who ate the same sandwich for years. There was nothing there. You talk about a Wizard of Oz situation.
That's
like, you could at any moment have said at the first accusation, at the first hint of any accusation, gone, let's get rid of this weirdo who just ate half a sandwich twice a day for, like, no one was looking to him for inspiration. It's like, oh my god, you know, that's like Michael Jordan. I mean, it's like fucking some guy who ate a sandwich with no charisma. Like, there's no reason you could have gotten rid of it. Anyway, that app, I go on Discovery, what a shit pile. And now he gets $250 million and he's ruining HBO. Like, he's taking the worst brand and burying the good one in it. And that's his big innovation. And that's, he's getting in total as much money as all of us want.
Right.
Yeah. And well, that's the thing. And he put out a statement the other day. They're all kind of putting out these like statements. It's like, we love our writers. We support the writers. We'd be nowhere without our writers. But and then they go into their thing, like, and Zaslav said, but, you know, the business is in a state of upheaval right now. It's like, created by you.
You,
you upheaved it.
Upheaved.
Well, this is a good point to dive in because, like, one of the things I was thinking about is that in the past, and when I was growing up and I had heard these names, and maybe you experienced them a little bit, but you would hear then a name like Warren Littlefield.
Yeah.
And you would think that this is someone both, you know, with an intelligence for the business, but with a passion for quality, seemingly.
Yeah. Yes.
For Robert Evans, like someone who you would go, look, I get that they have to have an eye on business and we are all subject to economic forces, but there seems to be a passion and an ability to do artistic things. And that seems like totally absent at this point. And am I crazy to think that that has been in decline, or am I romanticizing the past?
First of all, and I think Mulaney touched on this when he was here about SNL, about Lorne Michaels had, when Lorne left the show the first time, that he was kind of under the illusion that they care about quality. And his big takeaway was that they don't care if it's good.
Yeah.
It's about hitting certain financial numbers, you know, and that was true a long time, but I think it's even more true now. You could still get those occasional people that, you know, in the business, you know, that really cared about quality, but now it's so much about numbers. And I've had conversations about, like, where, you know, people at the top have told me, we don't like this show, but we own it 100%.
Yeah.
God. Well, that Goldie, you were a victim of that with your show, which was performing well, but it wasn't wholly owned by ABC. Isn't that right?
I mean, that's what I've heard, but I don't know. And, you know, I wouldn't consider myself a victim. Like, I'm happy the thing got on the air and, you know, I would wish it had gone better. You know, I do wonder as we talk about this, and just the idea of trying to make a living, right? And some of these little perks we get as writers that even if it comes down to some sort of economic wisdom, like you go, well, why are we paying for these guys lunch, right? Why are we paying for the writers to eat lunch? And you say, okay, You have these creative people, you've brought them in a room. Now, if you give them a meal and they all eat at the same time, like maybe they take their meals together, they start talking, they come up with ideas. Or, you know, the fact that you're doing this means they don't have to, they could take this meal, deal with their personal shit during this hour as they eat. So then they're not like coming in late or leaving early or like totally stressed about their kid or their doctor's appointment or whatever, because they have some time. Or that they don't then have to leave the show, go buy some lunch for, you know, like $14, and then, you know, they're running late or whatever, and they say, well, like, I don't need to get back. Like, fuck this. They don't care about us. Like, why am I going to bust my ass to get back? So it's like, I think sometimes they just look at a dollar amount without thinking about the full ramifications of spending the money and how it may save them in other ways. It seems like no psychology is applied at all.
Yeah, yeah. And these are a lot of like the same places that, like, they're bitching at you now about, you know, the cost of lunch for writers at, you know, the same places that in the 1980s were buying cocaine for the writers.
Right. Yeah, we mentioned Lorimar and Carolco earlier. They had to be doing that.
God, we missed everything good.
I know. I literally missed it. Like, I was so close, and it's probably a good thing.
Right. They were just hastily wiping off the table as you walked yes, in for your exactly. first day.
No, it was like all these veteran writers on my first job telling me, man, if you were here a year ago, that table would be a pile of cocaine.
Wow.
Oh my just God. Gazing up everyone's wrecked septum as you're trying to think of Bart lines.
That's great.
Oh my God. Well, so Mike, you're referring back to the to when you first came out here. So tell us a little bit about what was going on in the business during the first strike you went through. When was that, and what were some of the issues going into that one?
Yeah, the first strike for me was it was the 1920s. it was mainly about charcoal etchings. No, I should preface. My first job on a show was 1986, and the writers on that show, like, I was kind of I got my like Writers Guild card in the mail after having been there for X number of weeks, paid my initiation, and I was excited that I got my WGA card, and they all just shit on the guild, all these like veteran writers, like, oh man, you're gonna hate that place.
Oh my god.
They just take your money and they don't do anything for you, and fuck them.
Oh my god.
Wow. Like, all right. I think, well, these guys have been here a long time. I guess they know better. Right. And that was kind of my first impression of the Writers Guild. I didn't know anything about them. And I, you know, had the choice to read up and learn, but I just took it at face value. And so 1988, you know, like I said, only been on the one show, and the strike comes. And the big issue in that, there's always like kind of, you know, minimums and residuals. They always try to roll back healthcare, you know, pension, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The big issue of that one was VHS royalties of the 88 strike.
Yeah.
And it was the first time, though, however, prior to the 88 strike, the way I've since learned, the studios would come in, but they were all competitors, and they still acted as rivals in the negotiation. So they were always kind of looking to undercut each other.
Right.
And the 1988 strike, the lead negotiator, which I believe was a guy named Nicholas Counter, was the one who convinced them, you're doing this all wrong. Like, you've got to lock arms and present a united front.
Yeah.
Smart. And forget that you're competitors when you're in the negotiation room. And so that was the like an unexpected thing that happened in that negotiation, and it caused the strike to go much longer. And then we
delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
So I went to like my first big strike meeting at the Hollywood Palladium.
Wow.
To see what this was all about. And the union was kind of very fractured at the time. Nothing like, you know, what we have now. And so I went there to see what these meetings were all about. And Gary David Goldberg, and there was a lot of like yelling and screaming and name calling.
Wow.
I mean, as entertainment goes, it was awesome. But as union solidarity, not so much.
Right.
But Gary David Goldberg, creator of Family Ties, stood up at one point when the meeting was just out of control and commanded the whole room. And there's like 5,000-6,000 people in there. And gave this super eloquent speech about like what had transpired so far and how he thought we, you know, could, you know, get to the end and how we have to change our approach. And it was just so articulate in my head, like there is no way anybody is going to disagree with what he's saying. He finishes his speech and instantly, boo.
Oh, I love a lusty boo. Yeah, there's nothing better than a full-throated boo.
So that strike went like 5 months, maybe a little more than that.
And did people, were people opposed to holding out for those residuals on the VHS? Is that it? That people were like, let's just work, we make enough money? Was that the contingent that was booing, or what was the opposition to holding out?
I think it was like, there was a faction of don't change course, you know, don't veer from the plan, even though the studios had. It was kind of don't adapt,
right?
You know, or don't course correct,
right?
And you know, and some people were just saying like, "Fuck it, it's over," you know, "let's just go back to work." Other people were like, "No, we're out here for a reason, and we're out here for the future." And you know, writers in the '60s did this for us, and you know,
right,
that kind of stuff. So now, like, you know, flash forward after, you know, 88, there's no strikes for, you know, till 2007.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But I do feel like even if we struck every 50 years, the town would go, again?
Right. Right. Yeah.
It really doesn't matter how often it happens.
Yeah.
So during that time from 88 to 2007, the Guild, I think, did an awesome job of, you know, better leadership, organization, more reach out to members, more explaining of what the Guild does for them and how we got the things that we had. Like, because you don't know, a lot of times young writers don't know where residuals and healthcare and pension, where all that stuff comes from.
Yeah.
It's just kind of assumed that when you get the membership, that's part of it and that it was always there unless it's explained. And I think that's what the Guild has done a great job of since 88. In educating the membership.
Well, pre-email and cell phones, how was the information communicated to you? Would people just call you? Like, there were strike captains and they would say, and they would
mail,
you know, reach
mail?
Out in that way? Or was there a newsletter? Or?
It's a great question. I honestly, there was probably the magazine that at that time was actually like a real source of news, you know, and you could attend a meeting if you wanted to. So they were doing a good job of keeping you informed. I don't recall there being strike captains at the time. There might have been. I just don't remember.
Well, my dream as a writer, actually, my only goal is I want to be the first person ever to appear on the cover of WGA magazine shirtless.
and if you do, I want to ask that I be alongside you wearing your shirt and my shirt just so I can be double shirted. So, Mike, you brought up an interesting thing. And for our listeners who don't know, I can't imagine many of them don't, but residuals basically means if you've written an episode of television or a movie, and then that movie or TV episode gets replayed in reruns in the past on a cable network and now on streamers, that residuals are a little more money that you make for your work. And do you, Mike, have a, was that decided in the strike that you referred to in the 60s, or do you know how residuals initially came about? Because you just said we didn't always get them, and sometimes we feel like we just always have.
Yeah, I think that came about in the either 1960 or maybe 1973. I can't remember which. It might have been 60s. But I do remember work on my first job. There was a writer there who had written he had written on F Troop, yes. on the show, which I loved as a kid. Yeah. And I said, he said, "Oh, I just saw one of your episodes the other day." And his first question goes, "Was it in black and white or color? I get no money on the black and white ones."
Oh wow!
So I guess it was 60s. So.
That's funny.
Yeah, but residuals. It's not so much like it's nice, you know, it's always nice to get extra money, but the real, you know, plus of residuals and the real purpose is to tide writers over through what can be long stretches of unemployment.
Yeah.
And you will suddenly, like, just when you're like, are out of money, like rent money or food money, suddenly this envelope, you know, appears with a check for some work you did, you know, a year or two prior, and that can keep you going for several months. So it's really an important thing. And I think the studio's attitude has always kind of been, and I know this was like Rupert Murdoch in particular hates the whole concept of residuals. It's,
of course.
You know, I already paid for it once. Why am I paying again?
Of course.
But it's really, you know, it's important for writers to maintain a livelihood, and residuals are a big part of that.
Is there also, though, more of a justification for it? I mean, that's sort of, in my mind, the lesser justification, the greater justification is we take our intellectual property and sell it to them under this condition. And that, like, sometimes I do wonder if expressing it is like, well, you know, we need this money and then we happen to, it almost like lessens what we've done for them, which is, you know, we've essentially given them a patent or something, like we've invented something, we've created something and given them the rights to use the thing. And we want like a little cut each time they use it. And it's no different than, you know, if we invented some sort of faucet and they were selling millions of units of the faucet and we would get like 2 pennies a faucet. And so that's part of it though, right? Like, I'm not crazy in thinking that that's the legal.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I always remember the story about the McDonald's employee, the guy, they had a contest to invent a new sandwich for McDonald's and he invented the Big Mac.
Wow.
So the prize for the contest was $25.
Oh my God.
I think they've made that back.
Yeah, exactly. But to my knowledge, they've never given him anything beyond that $25.
Wow.
And that's still, it's a very corporate mentality of, hey, you knew the prize was $25,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
And it never happens with, and the streamers are a great example of this. And the like animated, the primetime animation like Simpsons and Family Guy, when something, you know, when you go into it and they say, we don't know what this is gonna be. Like this might not make any money. Like, you know, we can't even put a value on it. But when it blows up, you know, into multi, like hundreds of billions of dollars, they never come back and go, hey, you know, this wound up being a lot bigger than any of us thought.
No.
So we put this pile of money together
aside for
just for you. That does not cross their mind. So you always have to fight for it.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, that's a great point. They never come forward and admit something like that. And it does seem to me, and this is just a smaller point, but every clerical error that's occurred in my payment over the years has been in the studio's favor.
Yes.
There's never been a situation where they're like, whoops, we paid you double, or whoops, you got 2% extra on every paycheck. It's always the opposite. Always. And they always say, oopsie, you're right.
Some of the studios, that is their business model.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the most cynical thing I'm going to say today. But
I doubt it.
Based on my own experience, that every time I've caught it, they were like, oh, yeah, it was 7% short or whatever. And they just think, oh, these are dumb writers. They don't know anything about numbers. They'll never check. And I think it's a secret business model, perhaps.
Yeah. It could be. Yeah. It could. I've had that thought before. And also, for those writers out there listening, of course, this will do you no good now because we're on strike and no communication with the studios is possible. But there is a thing, and I became aware of this woefully late in my writing career, but when you have a deal with the studio, they withhold a certain amount of money until you physically sign the contract that they give you. Like, so if you have a 2-year deal for X amount of dollars and you start getting paid, they are still withholding a certain percentage of that money until you physically sign the contract, and they will never tell you that.
Wow.
And my agents, you know, the last couple of deals have been like, oh, did you know about this? I'm like, no. And it gets to be kind of a significant amount of money. So when we get back working, everybody sign their contracts.
Yes. Get that money.
Yeah. All right. So Mike, the 88 strike, you'd been out here a couple of years. I assume the show you were talking about working on was What a Country with Yakov Smirnoff.
Yes.
So hopefully he wasn't in your ear with some communist propaganda keeping this all going. But so it sounds like the major issue in that strike was the VHS residuals. And one of the major developments was that the networks locked arms, as you say, and decided, oh, this is going to be much better for us if we're all on the same page in this thing, which is a big tactical shift, apparently.
Yeah. And just player-wise, you just had, you know, a few studios and HBO. It wasn't like there's so many people involved now.
Right. So it was basically like five entities, right?
Yeah,
it's like the four networks. Fox was new and HBO was, you know, kind of new. All right. So that's, you're not dealing with as many players. So then fast forward to 2007. In the interim, we've had cable TV has exploded and there are now, you know, 400 channels as opposed to the four or five that were on before. So in 2007, what was your experience during that strike? Where were you at in your career? And what did you feel, you know, some of the major things were going on there in the business?
Yeah, 2007, I believe I was at
Parks and Rec.
Was I at Parks and Rec?
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, it might have been that. And like a combination, I was probably still consulting at Simpsons or something.
Right.
But the big one in 2007, like I said, there's always the minimums, residuals, healthcare, that kind of stuff. Okay. But the big overall one was jurisdiction over new media, of what they called new media, because they weren't calling it streaming yet.
Oh.
There wasn't really, I think Netflix was still in the like mailing DVD business.
Yep. Oh, wow. They just stopped that, by the way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did they really?
Yeah, they just, it was a news story like a week or two ago that they finally ended mailing DVDs to people like my dad.
Yeah, I guess now I get why you're striking.
Yeah, exactly.
Finally. I hope they let them keep the DVDs because what are they going to do with them? They don't need to mail them out again.
Yeah,
exactly.
True.
Yeah, so that was, you know, they were calling it new media as kind of an umbrella term for YouTube and internet and, you know, anything, maybe like on demand. No one really knew, again, like the value of what is this, you know, new media thing going to be. So we were just basically arguing to, first of all, set the precedent that writers are entitled to a share of this.
Yeah,
which is hugely important because their whole business model, if you've ever made a deal with anybody, the word precedent gets thrown at you a lot and never in your favor.
No.
Right.
The precedent is never doing the right thing.
Right.
So, the Trump administration?
Hey-o. Yeah. So that's really was the fight. And it was, as it dragged on, it was a hard concept for some people to understand. I mean, jurisdiction doesn't rhyme with a lot of chance. It doesn't really work well. So, you know, I mean, thank God, because there was still a contingent of people, of which I'm ashamed to say I was one of them, saying, "You were just going to let DVD royalties go?"
That's our future, man.
Yeah, exactly. What, our show's just going to appear out of thin air?
I remember you marching back and forth with your sweater made out of DVDs to draw that issue.
I wonder what DVDs would have been on that sweater.
Copland.
Copland, always. Copland. You blew it. Copland DVDs. So, okay.
And ice castles.
So, and now I seem to remember, because Goldie and I were out there at that point. We were working writers, and I seem to remember that strike had a good resolution for the writers. It felt like it at the time, or at least that's how it was portrayed to us. Like, we won.
Oh, just establishing that precedence that to get the studios to say writers are entitled to a piece of this is huge.
Yeah.
Because the normal position is you get nothing. This is our business and you're not entitled. And that's would be their precedent. So just getting our foot in the door, you know, to something that nobody knew the value of, was major. Like, now you can look, you know, at the billions and billions of dollars and the way the business has changed. So now we're trying to, you know, raise, you know, the agreed upon terms from back then. And, you know, this would have come up.
Well, to clarify, the companies are all losing a lot of money, which is why the presidents get paid so much.
Yeah.
Because they're doing such a good job.
I always think of that Mr. Burns line, like, I'd pay you, but I'm a bit strapped for cash. And then the roof caves in with gold coins behind him. It seems like that's what the CEOs are like right now. But so that's interesting about the 2007 strike, because I guess I had just forgotten how closely tied those issues are to kind of the ones we're dealing with now, where we were right back in 2007 to make a big issue out of this internet thing, because now it's almost all this internet thing. And so now we're saying, hey, we see what this business has become, and so we want a more livable slice of the pie from this new media. Is that kind of your impression of what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely. And we were also, I think writers were kind of sold a bill of goods by when the streamers started creating original content. There was a lot of, you know, come to Netflix, you know.
Notes, I remember being pitch is like, we're not going to give you notes. And of course, that changed.
Yeah, no notes, you know, see your creative vision, you know, come to life the way they were kind of selling themselves as the anti-network.
Right.
You
know? Was it actually like that at any point?
In the very beginning, but now it feels more calculated that they kind of knew what they were doing. And, you know, even at the beginning, actually for what, on the 2007 thing, I think back now, like, because we were, you know, the writers, we genuinely didn't know the value, and the studios were saying they don't know what the value is. But now I think back, like, I have a feeling they did know this is going to be huge.
Well, right. Why would they be doing it if they didn't think it would be huge? Like, they were just like, let's go into a business that's not a good business. Because, like, one thing, and this goes back to my original point, but so I was a page at NBC in 1996, and I remember, you know, I didn't want to be a tour guide and I didn't want to do much of the job. But when they gave me that blazer with a logo on it and I walked into 30 Rock, I had this sense of stepping into history, the sort of elegance of the job, the meaningfulness of NBC to America, what it meant to me growing up, a sense of nostalgia and both a sense of excitement that I was now going to be a part of this. And now, say, when I had a project at Amazon, I walk into Amazon and it's like, there's no history even here. Feel for the business, because their business is sending out stuff in packages to people, you know, right. Their business isn't creating, like, I don't even know what an Amazon show is or a Netflix show is. It's just a quantity business. Mm. And so I think they've kind of made the business even more cynical by not having a brand other than money. And so then when you go, hey, look, if this is about money for you, it's about money for us too, then. I don't see anything wrong with saying that.
Yeah.
You know, like we may be artists or whatever. Like, I think they want to go, yeah, but you're just concerned with that. And it's like, yeah, we are, but you're only concerned with money, seemingly.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't we be?
I mean, the only pushback I would have on that is I will say that as it seems like Netflix are kind of being pains in the asses at about these negotiations. I've heard a couple of times, like, they're the strongest holdout. But I will say, between Netflix and Amazon, I mean, come on, Netflix has way better shows. I'd say they have an identity artistically beyond Amazon, which is just a shit show over there. So not to stand up and defend Netflix, but at least their product is, I enjoy it.
Scab.
That's exactly what I was hoping for.
No, but the boo.
Boo earns.
Boo earns, exactly.
Yeah, but even Netflix now, I do find, like, I was trying to think of, like, what shows do I watch? Like, when Netflix first came out, I recall watching a lot of shows and wanting to check. And now I'm hard pressed to find, like, you know, shows that I actually want to watch on Netflix. I feel like there's an awful lot of Canadian horror movies.
That's pretty scary, eh?
But I mean, their difficulty in branding themselves and in doing that is, I think it's tied into their lack of appreciation for our work, honestly. It's like, they don't know what's good. They don't think what we do is valuable. They think it's disposable, and it isn't. And they don't realize that's your business is this. Like, why do you not value it? It's crazy. Your only business is creative stuff, and we are the people who do that. So what do you think your business is? Just like rotating crap? Like, that's why you went to business school and got that job and filled out that application and trained for the interview and put your, you know, stupid business outfit on to go into the company to just do crap?
I think rotating crap, that's their business meeting every morning. What crap are we rotating today?
That would be the old NBC Wheel of Mystery.
Rotating.
With Columbo and McMillan and wife or something. It's like rotating crap.
What was the other one there with the guy who rode the horse?
He
was
McLeod.
McLeod.
Wow.
Yeah. And by the way, like, as much as we bash sometimes on executives, and jokingly so, because we all know good executives, like, I really think it's the executives want to do good. I think they're hampered by the same forces we're hampered by, which is literally just at the top. And I'm talking about, like, the CFO, CEO level, a lack of vision and appreciation and even an understanding of what a good show is and how a show works. I don't think they get it at all.
Yeah,
most of the creative executives that, you know, I've dealt with, I mean, they became creative executives because they love TV, they love movies. It's not, you know, they're not like, you know, we love budgets. but it's changed. And I think, like, again, like when the streamers came in, it was the first time I started hearing TV shows referred to as content. We need more content. We need products. We need, you know, like, it's like, they're shows. Why don't you call them shows anymore? Right. You've got a word with more syllables. You can just say shows, you know, and I
a
think in their heads syllables. that's what it is, you know, that it's just product.
Well, I mean, you haven't come from The Simpsons, and we obviously work on Family Guy, and we're very similar, and not just in that joking way, but we're very similar in that I feel like, and this has been confirmed, I feel like they don't care what the episode is. They don't care about one joke in it, as long as you're not offending Christians. You know, they don't care about anything in the show. They don't care about how it's written. They just want the 22 minutes to add to their stockpile, another. And it's like Lucy with the chocolates. Like, they just want them to keep coming out, as you said, and they don't really care what it is. But to get back to a minute about HBO Max, which will soon be Max, which I also think you're right, Goldie. That's just, it's like
Guy Endor Kaiser, who's a friend of ours, a writer. Yeah. He said, that's like as if Disney changed its name to Walt.
Right. Or it's just like if the two basketball teams in LA change themselves to the Laker Clippers, and then just you know what, we're just gonna go with Clippers. And it's like, why? Exactly. But so HBO, especially because it seems like we were talking about them a little bit, it seems so ironic, and I hope I love Succession. You know, it continues to just amaze. And this on this week's Succession, and this is not a spoiler, there was a scene on the balcony between Tom and Shiv, okay? That was one of the best written scenes I've ever seen in any. It was like, you could have torn that right out of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. It was that level of complex and savage and sad. And it was clearly, you know, this was a writer. A writer put this amazing scene together against the backdrop of their company who's putting this out saying, shut up, writers. You know, you already get plenty. It's like, we are giving you the pinnacle of this art form. And here it is for you on Sunday night. And you're still going to say like, nah, I don't care if your wages are down 25%. It's unfair.
Right.
It just seemed like horrid relief that those two things are happening at the same time.
No, and I think that scene you're talking about was actually a great argument, not only for the writers, but for the Directors Guild and the Screen Actors Guild. It was everybody operating, you know, IATSE, like everything operating at its most, you know, creative and awesome and, you know, where you want to, you know, we actually went back and watched the scene a second time after it happened.
Oh, wow.
Because it was that good.
It was so good. It was so good that Tal and I could not make eye contact during it. That's how good it was. It was such a great scene.
Which one did you think you were?
Oh, I knew. I knew which one I was. Oh, yeah. Ground control to Major Tom right here. Call me Wams Gans. Well, yeah, go ahead, Goldie.
Well, one thing I thought we could talk about, you know, given that this is your third strike now, is I remember the last strike. So I was 07. I started writing in 02, and I was part of the 07 one. And I remember, you know, at the time I didn't have kids. And I was just living in an apartment. I didn't have a ton of money saved or anything. So I was in more desperate circumstances than I am now. And I would remember being like really addled about it and refreshing Deadline, you know, several times a day and reading the comments and trying to parse for myself, like, what's going on? And like, are the sides any closer? And so I thought maybe, could you speak to sort of maybe how to guard yourself against being manipulated and how to get through the strike psychologically. Because one thing I'm doing this time is I'm not checking Deadline and I'm not reading any comments and I'm just going to rely on when the Guild emails me and tells me what's going on.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to what a great job the Guild has done over the years in organizing the membership and talking to us directly and to where we now know, because I was the same in that 2007 strike. I think Nikki Fink should have given us a piece of Deadline when she sold it.
Yes. Oh, my God.
That strike put that website on the map.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because of our incessant refreshing.
Yeah.
Just to see any half-baked rumor or anything. We just were so hungry for information. But the Guild has done a great job of just letting everybody know anything you read that's not a direct communication from us is bullshit.
Yeah.
And don't let anybody speak for us. Don't, you know, just don't believe it. And everybody I've talked to is on board now. We get it. And they came through by sending us that chart of exactly what went down in the negotiations.
Yeah.
That was huge.
Instead of just their interpretation of it, we actually saw the numbers and the responses and what they were asking for and what was offered. And, you know, I think it really rallied a lot of people. As much as people did not want to strike, you can't read that thing and say, oh, we should have taken this deal.
Yeah, they wouldn't even negotiate on so many of the issues, which was really alarming. And now it seems like, because Goldie brought up Deadline, and I agree, like back in 2007, I feel like I was doing the same thing, reading the comments, refreshing, seeing stories. But now Deadline seems to be a kind of corporate mouthpiece. It like the few headlines that I have seen that people will post on Instagram angrily saying, look what Deadline said about
like the way our they strike. Phrase things.
They do seem intentionally misleading. Like there was this thing where, God bless Michael J. Fox, one of my favorite all-time celebrities, but he has there's a documentary about him that's coming out. It's called Still. I believe it's for Apple TV. And they were supposed to have the premiere of it right after the strike started. And he said, well, fuck that. I'm not going to the premiere because I'm in solidarity with the Writers Guild. And the Deadline headline was like, writers strikes concerns postpone, you know, Still premiere. Instead of saying Michael J. Fox, you know, refuses to break strike, like, which would have been a much more effective headline for us. So have these companies like Deadline that started out as like, well, we're just going to try and report the news, they're now in the pockets, it seems like, of bigger corporations.
Yeah, I think they do count on them for access to, you know, all sorts of information from the sets of movies that are shooting or from premieres and film festivals. And so they're in constant communication with the studio. So, yeah, I would say for every article that I've seen recently on Deadline that addresses, you know, what's going on right now, like for every four or five that seem to be slanted to the studio, there's one in support of writers. Now they're trying, I noticed yesterday, they're trying to do a lot of pictures from the picket line, that sort of thing.
Right.
But yeah, no, I think there definitely is a little bit of in the pocket.
Yeah. Well, all right, so that's interesting. So basically, the takeaway there is if you're a writer, listen to the Writers Guild, because that seems like, I mean, they were incredibly transparent in putting, I think that was a genius move that they put out that document that was our proposals and their answers to them, because that was just like black and white.
Yeah, and it does get hard. As the strike goes on, you get so hungry for information, you know?
Yeah.
And we just, you know, you have to trust the union that when there is information, they'll give it to us. It wasn't the guild that walked away from the table. It was the studios.
Well, one thing I remember from 07, and I would anticipate this happening again, although I don't have knowledge of it, but it seemed one of the tactics was they'll get a meeting on the books in, you know, a week or 2 weeks. And then you get all ramped up and you're like, okay, maybe it'll be resolved at this meeting. And then they just walk out to increase your desperation. Now, do you remember other tactics that have been used to sort of subterfuge our psychologies? Or
well, I remember Sony took one of my kids once.
That's just babysitting.
and you almost reacted. Yeah. To your credit, you held it back. You said, no.
I did. I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction.
How long before you even noticed one was missing?
That's right. It's a big clan over at the Scully House. We're down a girl.
And getting back to what you were saying, like stuff they do, Goldie, it is the planting of, you know, phony stories of, you know, I mean, you saw like the first day of the strike, I believe there was conflicting stories of what went down in the room. And they make a big deal out of, hey, you know, we gave you that, you know, staff writers.
We're
get
close.
Paid.
Yeah, we're close. Yeah. It's you guys. And I think that you just have to be aware that when they say that, it's just words probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if I want to believe like who was the most, you know, entrenched in the room, let's see, the eight lawyers or the eight writers.
Right.
That's a great point. Well, now, because we know you actually have to get out to the strike line, so we just want to get a couple more things in here. We have
a fun
bit we want to do at the end that Goldie
I'm
thought
counting
of.
This as picketing now. So.
Oh, yeah. good. Yeah. Yes, it is. Strike.
It is.
Yeah, pencils down means pencils down. Yeah. Hollywood's a union tent. But so how do you... Because, you know, people are speculating, oh, my God, the strike is going to go on for, you know, 3 months, 6 months or whatever. You've been through a couple now before. Does there start to be a feeling like this is going to end And do you remember any of the hallmarks, you know, the doves from shore that let you feel like, okay, we are maybe now actually close to getting somewhere?
I always look at it as anytime they're talking with each other, there's a hope.
Yes.
So I think that's the only indicator. I can't say the indicator that the end is near, but anytime they're talking with each other, there's a hope. And when they're not talking, it can be discouraging. But we're also going to see what happens like with the DGA and SAG negotiations. I think those are starting up soon. The DGA might actually start tomorrow. So the support of like of those places, and I think every union could benefit from this, you know, the shutting down of production. Like yesterday, the Duffer Brothers, you know, shut down Stranger Things, and I believe it's their final season. It'll be a huge deal for Netflix.
Yeah.
And they shut down production until the strike is over.
That's huge.
And, whoa.
Yeah, that's gigantic. And, you know, and the cast of that show, you know, they're like in their mid-40s now, right?
Well, okay, so I think that's a great point, and I totally agree with you. And that speaks to, I think, the writer's mentality, which is, you know, as negative and cynical as we can be for comedy, I think we tend to be hopeful about things like this. And your point is well taken, that if they're talking, that there's hope. And I do believe that. I think that's a great, you know, final message on this. But Goldie, you had a fun idea for us to spend a couple minutes here. Would you want to set this up?
So the strike signs have an area where you can write your own caption. And some of them have been pretty good. They've been on the, you know, more publicized, like "you guys created Quibi" or whatever. They've been funny ones. So I thought we could maybe go around and do some ideas for signs like these. I haven't been able to do. I can throw out a few. We can each throw out a few. I was thinking of writing on my sign, "I should be home masturbating."
Yes. We all feel that way.
"I hate writers too, but this is ridiculous."
That's good. Very Jewish.
Well, this is a little bit inside baseball. "Why are you all named Dana?" Every executive is apparently named Dana.
Yeah, well, certainly one of the biggest ones.
"More of you than of us were on Epstein's plane."
That had ended quick. That would terrify everyone.
And here's, I'll just do one more. "Les Moonves showed his penis to his diabetes doctor, and he was the best one of you."
Oh, wow.
That's great. Oh, my God. I didn't prepare any of these, but I will say the one that I will definitely be using when I'm out there next week, which is "chanting makes me uncomfortable."
That's true.
I feel like that lowers the tenor of the line a little bit. And now I may have to add, in honor of Goldie, I went to high school with Will Willis. That's just if you're there, just if we're on the same line. Now, Mike, I saw you had a Simpsons drawing on one of yours. Was that right? Did I see that?
Oh, that was one of the show writers. Cesar Mazarigos happens to be an incredible artist too. So he had a drawing on his side, and on one side he had drawn comic book guy, and I believe it said "worst offer ever."
That's really good.
That's fantastic.
And on the other side he had Homer drawn and said "stupid Zaslav."
That's right. Keeping them short is always good. That whatever little comment you want to have on your sign, keep it short.
All right. Well, let's see. I got a few here. It is because several of them were using like famous movie lines or lines from shows like that. So "you had me at fuck off."
Oh, I love that one.
"I heard your note on my script. I'm just refusing to counter." "There's no place like home broadcast streaming ad-supported video on demand residuals."
Great.
I actually, when I was reading that chart, there was one like HSBSVOD. So what the fuck is that?
I know.
That's whatever true. It is, we're not getting it. But I don't know. I had to look it up. And this is to the studio. Yeah. You could solve this for the cost of 12 shitty John Stamos pilots.
That's great. Yeah. Oh, my God. Those are funny. Maggie Mull had a very funny one, which because one of the issues is AI. You know, we're trying to get them to, you know, sort of chill out with AI a little bit. And she had a sign that said, let's see AI gain 15 pounds on a first year show, which yeah. I thought was great.
That was so good.
Here's one that could be the official, atypical, disgusting display one.
Ooh.
You idiots, we didn't even want to write until you told us we can't.
I love that one.
That's great.
I am looking forward to like the first AI writer's room of where it's like, there's, in my head, they're all robots for some reason, but it's just, you know, it's like, you know, the robot is who always, I got to take this call, just walking out of the room.
There's always one. That's so funny. Just a robot constantly out on the balcony with the phone to its ear. Yeah. those are great. Well, that was a fun thing, Goldie. Yeah. Thank you. And thank you, Mike Scully, again, yes. for finally agreeing to come back on the podcast.
When you cancel AI show, it will kill you.
Oh, that's good.
That's great. Oh, boy. You got to use that one. That one is very usable. Yes. Well, Mike right, Scully, you are a hero to us already.
Yes,
and we really appreciate you being here. And you've always been a big supporter of the Guild. So thank you for letting our listeners hear about your experiences. And good luck to us all going forward.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for having me again. It was a kick
thanks
to be back.
Thanks for being here.
All right, Mike Scully, thank you. Oh, boy, that was fun talking to Mike. He's always so fun and funny and smart. Great to talk to him. So glad Goldie was able to book him.
Well, you know, you just need to use a soft hand on these.
Yes, so.
Takes a little diplomacy. You'll get there.
All right, now we've gotten to a portion of the show that we like to call Top five.
Top five.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. Well, whose was this?
Mine.
JC, let's tell the folks what we're top fiving about today.
This week is top five dog breeds.
Yes. Yes. All right.
All right.
Start
I go
off.
First. Okay. So my number five is a blue heeler, which is a version of an Australian cattle dog, which is different from a sheepdog. But ooh. I owned one. I had one in the 90s and named Rugby. And he was just a very, very, very special, beautiful creature. And then
not special enough to be top three, but
no. That's a really good point.
Number five.
I loved him more than anything. Number four.
I really didn't think that through, did I? Okay. My number four may be influenced a little bit by Stu, the English Springer Spaniel. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful dogs.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Number three, the pug.
Oh, yeah.
The pug.
I think we have overlap.
Yeah, I think this group has an overlap. I love a pug. Number two, I've never owned one, but I kind of think I would love to own one, would be a King Charles Spaniel. There's a common thread here. Yeah,
they're topical.
It is very topical. Good point. And my number one, I think one of the most beautiful dogs and very special, another version of this, but is the actual Australian sheepdog. They're so smart. Oh, they're so
you
beautiful.
You like the smart dogs.
There's one down the street, hates my dog, and I hate that dog.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why? Why do you think they hate each other?
Actually owned by Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth.
Yes.
So she doesn't like me. She hates my dog.
All right, Goldie, is it you?
No, because I'm, don't
oh,
I have
you,
next
week? You have the topic. Okay, got it. Yes, okay. For me, number five, Chocolate Lab.
Oh,
nothing I like better than a fat chocolate lab. Just one with its legs splayed out, and just you just toss pieces of toast to it, and that's it just funny. Eats it all up. So that's chocolate, cute. And they're very sweet, so sweet.
Yes.
Number four, we've owned a few of these now, and they're so cute and so awesome, and like Volvos, they live forever. Brussels Griffon.
Oh.
They're little dogs. It was the dog in As Good As It Gets that Jack Nicholson puts down the garbage chute.
Oh, jeez.
They're very cute. They look like either little Chewbaccas or little Ewoks,
if
you look at them.
Okay, yes.
Very cute. Very cute. Number three, exact same cute. As JC, the pug.
Oh, same place,
Pugs
too.
Are adorable. Oh, yes. Love them. Love them. Number two, and this is a product of growing up, my childhood in Massachusetts, it felt like every family but ours had a golden retriever.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, God. They're beautiful dogs. They're so loving and loyal and sweet. Can't get enough of them. I really wanted to put them number one. Were it not for a dog breed that is not nearly as sweet or loyal as that, but I love them so much. French Bulldogs.
Oh, yeah, they're so cute.
God, they're so cute. And we had one stubborn really? As all hell. They have, like pugs, they have eye pressure issues. So this one was like
adorable.
A one-eyed pirate by the time, at the end of her life, but just so awesome. So yeah, those are my five.
I don't respect a dog that's not stubborn. You know, of course it wants food and stuff. So, you know. Anyway, number five, they're big, they're stupid, they're funny, poodles.
Oh, yes. They're not, are they stupid?
No, they're smart, but they're kind of goofy.
They look stupid.
They are goofy. They're smart, but, you know, they're clowns.
Smart enough to be like human stupid.
Yeah,
right.
They're what the French refer to as guignol. They're clowns.
Ooh.
Number four, I'm with you, Alec, the golden retriever. I've known a few of them, a few great ones, Huckleberry. Throughout my life.
Yes.
One once trapped me against a couch while I was playing Nintendo with a friend in his basement. Fucked me for a solid half hour as everyone was rolling on the ground in peals of laughter and I was pleading for help. But I'll let them target.
He too.
He too.
I got absolutely stone cold fucked by this dog. But I still like the breed. Number three, French Bulldog.
Oh, nice.
Number two, as a Massachusetts guy, a little offensive you missed this, Boston Terrier.
Oh.
Yeah.
They're
Frenchies
so
and Boston
goofy.
Terriers are very similar.
I think a Boston Terrier has a better personality. They're funnier, goofier, and more loving than a Frenchie. And number one, come on, man.
Obvious.
I'm not going to.
Lloyd.
Lloyd
will be Lloyd.
In the world.
Good Lloyd.
I have next week's topic.
Ooh.
And it's gonna be a quick one, but I think a good one. Top five words.
Oh.
Wow, just straight up words.
Just words. Top five words.
Are we allowed to do that during the strike?
We'll see. I'll try to get an exemption.
Singular
there
words.
There we go. Okay.
Singular
That'll be
words.
Fun. Next week, top five words. Tune in for that. And also tune in next week for our guest. We are very excited to have, she was the head writer at SNL for quite a while, Anna Drezin.
Yay.
And she's got a new show coming that she is in development, or not now in development, but will be in development when we end the strike. What's that show called, JC?
Praise Petey.
Praise Petey.
Praise Petey.
Yes, we'll talk to her about that. We'll talk
so
to her about
the strike.
Look
forward to that in 2027.
Poor Anna.
And of course, we'll talk to her about our favorite love-hate topic, which is Saturday Night Live. So
yes.
Anna Drezin, tune in for that next week. And now let's end the show as we do every week on a high note. Oh, Tom and Max, that's beautiful. And we had a breakthrough with Tom. I had been worried for months that we had done something to offend Tom Gamble, which is why he hadn't been on here in so long, because he's one of our favorite guest participants,
yes.
characters ever.
Yes.
And JC, you dug up the real dirt. What was the answer there?
No, I didn't.
Goldie, did you tell me?
Yeah, he had gotten a writing gig and he was worried that if he came on the podcast, he would sort of spill proprietary information that he had
you
about this
gig. You can
say
what the show is.
No, I don't even want to do that because he, I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, let him say it.
Yeah, let him say it if he wants to. But he's been very busy writing for a very good show that we all love, and that he was worried about, that he knew it was going to happen, that he couldn't stop himself from gushing about all the good, funny things he did. So he will be back in some capacity at some point.
Good. And when we get him back, we'll have him gush and tell all the secrets of that show that we all love. All right. So my high note, I'll get it out of the way quickly. My high note is American Idol. American Idol, I've loved the show for years, but it, as it happens this year, it's great. The quality, I don't know if it's ever been better. The top eight that we're left at now, they're really all fantastic. And this also happened to be the year that my daughter, Levy, decided that she wants to be a singer and definitely will be on American Idol one day. So now we all watch that together, and it's just a great experience. So American Idol, great job.
Cool. You think she's going to be a country singer?
Well, at this point, she's got to hit a note first. She's a little off.
Oh, sweet.
We'll get her there.
Yes. You want to go, Goldie?
Sure. I've been out on the strike line now for the last however many days, and I just, I've actually found it very inspiring. And every day I go, I see an old friend I haven't seen in a while. I walk with them. I've been catching up. So as much as none of us relishes being in a labor dispute and we all hope for a quick conclusion, I've got to say the sort of community around it has been great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well said.
Awesome.
JC, what do you got?
Mine is on Easter, I had some friends that I met on SNL come over who, their families don't live here. And we played this board game called the Emerald Flame. And the people that I did this with, they're like my escape room friends. We've done maybe 30 escape rooms together. Yeah. I've done over 50. I'm sure I've talked about it before. But it was one of my besties, Brian McElhaney and Luke Knoll and Caitlin Schultz. And Brian reached out to me. He's a writer. And obviously he's on strike. And he reached out to me last night and was just like, by the way, we only did half the game. There's this game takes maybe 10 hours to finish. So he wrote and he said, I've got this, I'm in the middle of a strike. I'm losing my mind. When are we finishing this game? And so this game is really, we're going to try it this weekend, but it's really been a good way to get our minds off of things in general, just to get together with friends and solve some really complex puzzles. And it's been really, it's like kind of my dream is just to play these kinds of games every weekend with my friends. So Goldie, I love this game.
Goldie, how do you think Norm MacDonald would spell board game?
Is it B-O-R-E-D? Yeah.
All right. Well, good. Whatever floats your boat, JC.
I like puzzles.
I'll take your word for it on Green Flame.
The Green Flame. Willem Dafoe is the Green Emerald. Actually, that sort of sounds
Emerald
like
Flame.
Craig
Flame.
Kilborn is the Jade Detective. The Green Flame, Goldie.
Craig would be the flame.
Craig would be the flame. You're going to write it. I'm going to produce it. Craig's the flame.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I just died.
Oh, no.
All right. That was a very fun show. Thanks again to Mike Scully.
Yes.
Tune in next week for Anna Drezin.
Yay,
thank
Anna.
You all for listening. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank
and
you.
We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you, YouTube, for being awesome.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
I don't respect a dog that's not stubborn.